Do you recall the stables where they used to keep the horses? And
no, I don't actually. The horses had gone by the time I got there. Interesting, my aunt, when I was young, was walking down Peter's Row, and a horse, one of their horses, bit her on the arm. She never got any compensation. And that was my first introduction to Jacob's. Except even prior to that, I remember the Jacob's Pixie biscuits. As a kid, I thought they were great, the way you could fit them together and all the different images on them.
Yeah, yeah. You have a photograph with you, and it's quite an unusual building just outside the factory there.
That's right, on Peter's Row. There was a triangular space that we owned, and it was later years just used for car parking. But during the Second World War, the emergency, Jacobs actually bought a second-hand gas... I can't think of the word. A gasometer. And they used this... they had this ready in case we needed to use gas in an emergency.
What did it look like? I mean, we see the photograph there, but did you...
Well, it was gone by my time, yeah. But it was probably the same as the gasometers I remember from Dublin, which were, you know, big circular, upside-down tins that, as the gas filled in, it moved up,
yeah.
And to allow the gas to build into it. The thing that Jacobs did at this time was they stockpiled turf on the playing grounds out on Rutland Avenue, because Jacobs had a football team.
Was this during the emergency?
During the emergency, yeah. And there are photographs of these ricks of turf. Some people may remember from the Phoenix Park and St. Anne's in Clontarf, where the corporation piled the turf and stockpiled it in case it was needed in an emergency.
Yeah, and of course, the there was no coal coming into the country then, and so turf was that came up from places in the west, from the west. And
that's right. Also, Jacobs let some people off. To go down to farms to help bring in the harvest, and also, as far as I know, also to dig harvest the turf. There are a few records about that. One thing is, I mentioned there was like a little village in the city, but Jacobs also had its own school, and they used to run classes for employees after hours, and they set up their own national school, but that had to be stopped because the government was saying that, you know, a commercial company couldn't run a national school, so it was transferred to another place. I can't remember where, but Jacobs did that. But Jacobs also had sewing classes and drill classes.
Did you attend any of the classes?
No. You know, most of those had gone out probably by the 60s. There were sports. Jacobs had a swimming pool in the factory, and they used to teach people how to swim, and it was available, but it was actually right in at the end of the bakehouse, and was rather a novel idea for the time. I think Jacobs were one of the first to introduce a coffee bar in the 1880s, where employees could buy coffee.
Did you get a sense of self-attainment?
Yes, very much. That Jacobs was somewhere, I think, seen by a lot of people as somewhere special, because two things. One is it had so many different options. And secondly, there were, I call them in inverted commas, dynasties, because generations of families worked in Jacobs. And I'm sure some of the people you'll be talking to you know, their grandfathers probably, or grandparents worked in Jacobs. Also, like when I went there, there were, I think it was four canteens, but at one time there were five canteens in Jacobs, one for the girls, one for the men, one for the office staff, one for the supervisors, or and one for the directors.
My goodness.
So it was... Jacobs also had a doctor and originally a social secretary for the girls. This was around about 1911, at the time of the lockout.
Yeah.
They produced a very interesting little booklet showing all the things they could do, that they did for their staff. Because I think they were badly treated in some ways by Jim Larkin. Things weren't perfect, but I think Jacobs were one of the better places for working. They were very strict, and even right up to the 60s, if you were a minute late, the doors were closed and you didn't get in for 15 minutes or half an hour.
But that type of discipline surely played a good part in the overall... The way the factory was run, that there was no laying about or coming in a half an hour late.
Yeah. No, it introduced a discipline which was needed probably for the company to survive. But it came over sometimes as being very harsh. You know, the way when you look back on the employee records and you see people who are late maybe five times being let off for a week or laid off for a week or 2 weeks. Other practices, like a lot of a group of men used to have to come along every day. I've forgotten there was a term that they used to use for it, but they'd have to line up and then they choose some out of the line. Andy Cleary might be able to give you some information on that.
Oh, this type of work practice would have been quite common in those days, because the farmers down the country, they picked out the... This yeah. was a gathering of
people, and then you chose from the line. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, where would these people line up?
As far as I know, it was in Peter's Row, but I could be wrong on that. The entrance to Jacobs changed over the years, so sometimes you hear a story, but they say they waited outside the gate. But the trouble is, I might be thinking of the gate that I knew at the time, which may not have been the gate that those men used.
Yeah.